Last June, I was sitting in the middle of my bedroom floor. There were clothes and suitcases spread all around me. I was trying to figure out how to bring just one of those suitcases with me to the retreat center I was heading to, a Buddhist community led by Thich Nhat Hanh. In keeping with a very Zen, one bowl, one spoon approach, I decided to just bring one book. But which book? Should I bring a juicy piece of literature or poetry? Or maybe a hefty work of theology? In the end, I chose this book. This is the same book that reportedly Martin Luther King Jr. carried around with him in his travels. Jesus the Disinherited, written by a friend of the King family, Howard Thurman, one of the most respected theologians of the 20th century. Reverend Thurman attended Morehouse College with Martin Luther King Sr., and he studied under the influential thinkers Benjamin E. Mays and John Hope, both of whom served as president of Morehouse College. For 3 weeks, I read Howard Thurman and listened to Thich Nhat Hanh. Eventually, I came to see that they were both talking about dignity. Both Buddha and Jesus taught that awakening an individual to the awareness of her own dignity would lead her to treat others and herself with love and compassion. Not the strength of law, not the authority of the religious institution, but a greater awareness of one's own dignity leads to loving kindness. The concept of dignity is implicit in most all of the world's religions. It is explicitly named in the Unitarian Universalist Principles, the Episcopal Book of Prayer, and the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And each January at this time, the President of the United States makes a proclamation recognizing Martin Luther King Day, honoring him for promoting the dignity of every person. So if dignity is such a widely accepted and widely valued concept, then why are so many people suffering indignities? Why are they treated as if they had no worth, no nobility in their personhood? What is it, this thing called dignity, other than some nice-sounding language for dressing up proclamations and declarations? Is it, as stated in our principles and purposes, inherent in every human being? Or, as one prominent Unitarian Universalist minister proclaimed, just a social construct, something assigned by the community to those who are deemed worthy? A few years ago, William Schultz, past president of the Unitarian Universalist Association and former executive director of Amnesty International USA, delivered the Berry Street essay. I want to make a little history aside here. In 1832, William Ellery Channing, minister of the Federal Street Church in Boston, opened the doors of his vestry and invited his fellow Unitarian ministers to an annual lecture there. And that door happened to open onto Berry Street. The Berry Street essay is delivered by a distinguished UU minister at our annual General Assembly. There has been a lecture held each year since 1832, except for 1 year during World War II. So back to Mr. Schultz. In the year 2000, he delivered a Berry Street essay entitled, What Torture Taught Me. Reverend Schultz admitted that he no longer believes in the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Years of dealing with torture and other heinous crimes caused him to abandon this most basic principle. Now he sees dignity not as inherent, but as a social construct. I agree with him. And I disagree with him. I agree that one type of dignity is constructed by society, a social concept of dignity. And I believe that there is another type of dignity, one that is inherent in human nature, a religious concept of dignity. The first type of dignity refers to a status created by humans, and the second refers to a nobility that is not man-made. Social dignity is assigned by other people, and it can be easily taken away. Inherent dignity is a capacity intrinsic to human nature. It can never be taken away by anyone. Social dignity grants status to some people and withholds it from others. When you have lost your job, your family, your home, your money, when you are thrown out into the cold, you lose your social dignity. And if this were the only type of dignity, you would have nothing left. The somebody you used to be would be gone. You would be nobody. But there is another kind of dignity, a far more important kind of dignity, one that is not dependent on fickle human notions of what is dignified. Rather, it is a dignity inherent in every human being, and not just the select. William Ellery Channing gave us a conception of human nature that includes a very wide range of human capacities: critical thinking, affection, imagination, moral conscience, ability to respond to beauty, religious sentiment. According to Channing, all of these capacities are good, but if they are not given a chance to unfold, if they are blocked in any way, then a person may act with violence and hatred. The Buddhists give the name seeds to these qualities that Channing calls capacities. I like this metaphor. A Buddhist rendering of Channing's conception of human nature would be a storehouse in which there are many seeds. Everyone is born with these seeds, with a full range of capacities, and dignity is one of those seeds, one of the more important seeds. Dignity is the capacity to rise to our highest and best selves, the capacity to rise to our true nobility, the closest we can get to our divine nature. Given that dignity is a capacity, a potentiality, it is our struggle to make it an actuality. It is our struggle to choose dignity over indignity that brings nobility to our lives. The potential for this type of nobility, for this type of dignity, is present in every human being. And in some, the seed of dignity is fresh and green. In others, the seed has lain dry and dormant for years. No one has watered that seed in a very long time. Howard Thurman's book is like a watering can for those seeds. Written in 1946, the book's main audience was the poor, the dispossessed, the disinherited. The book continues to be reprinted today because it really is for everyone who stands with their backs against the wall, as he put it. It is for all those who need profound succor and strength to enable them to live their lives with dignity. And who among us doesn't know what it's like to stand against the wall, to be up against that wall in some way or another? Who among us does not need profound strength and succor to live each present moment with dignity. When I was younger, my seed of dignity lay dormant. It was buried deep in the scarring experiences of my ancestors living under Japanese occupation, then occupying forces, military dictatorship, and American racism. And so my seed of dignity lay dormant for quite a long time. In a collection of essays by African American men, writer Haki Matabuti tells a story about dignity that resonates with my own. Matabuti is one of those prolific people whose identity can't be condensed into just one word, like poet, which he is, or writer, which he is, or educator. He has created a number of independent Black institutions, including a publishing house called Third World Press. One day, when he was 13 years old, his mother asked him to go to the Detroit Public Library and check out a book called Black Boy by Richard Wright. He refused to go. He didn't want to go and ask the white librarian for a book by a Black author, especially one with the word Black in the title. I remember feeling that same embarrassment and shame about my race. No one actually told me or Matabuti that we should hate ourselves, but we were products of white institutions and white educational systems, and they reinforced that perceived supremacy of Western civilization. At his mother's insistence, Matabuti finally did get that book. He read it and hasn't stopped reading since. For him, reading about the experiences of other African Americans watered his seed of dignity, even as the world around him proclaimed his lack of it. Where can we turn for succor and strength, for water for our seeds of dignity? And how can we provide water for the dignity of others? Howard Thurman suggests a way in the telling of a famous parable. One day, a crowd of men brings a woman to Jesus. She has been caught in the act of adultery. To the men, this woman is not a person. She is an adulteress. Reminding Jesus that the law calls her to be stoned to death, they ask him for his judgment. Jesus replies, "He that is without sin among you, let him cast the first stone." Silence. Then one by one, the men leave. "Has no one condemned you?" Jesus asked the woman. "No one," she answered. "Neither do I condemn you. Now go and sin no more." Jesus is showing reverence for this person's inherent worth and dignity. He meets the woman right where she is and treats her as the inherently dignified person that she is. He stirs in her the confidence of her own worth. As Howard Thurman describes it, he places a crown over her head, which for the rest of her life she would keep trying to grow tall enough to wear. When I hear Thurman's parable, I don't so much picture Jesus, I picture the Buddha holding up the crown. And when you hear this parable, maybe some other image comes to mind. Someone who calls you to your highest self. Unfortunately, a lot of people can relate to the woman in the parable when she was treated as an object and not as a human being. People of color especially know what it's like to be treated as a two-dimensional stereotype instead of a human being with inherent dignity. In her book about young African-American identity, Natasha Tarpley recalls her sophomore year at Harvard. One day she was taking the computer out of her dorm room to her family's car parked outside. She was going home for the weekend and she wanted to finish a paper, so her 16-year-old brother was helping her carry this computer out of her room. When they got outside, the security guard stopped them. "Don't move. You're not going anywhere," he said. Natasha's mother came out of the car to talk to the guard. He wouldn't listen. Soon, four squad cars came to the scene, and all the other students going in and out of the building were asked if they knew Natasha, if they could verify who she was. Eventually, the police left, and Natasha and her family were free to go. But this kind of thing happens every single day. If you live in a community that is constantly suspicious of you, demanding verification, putting you down, it is very difficult to find the strength to water your own seeds of dignity. Writing later about this experience, Natasha says she lost a part of herself that day, a part that was hopeful about being accepted and about equal dignity. And what about that security guard? It's way too easy to label him a racist. People are more complicated than that. He's a product of his experiences too. Who held the crown above his head? What keeps his inherent dignity dormant and blocked if he is not able to see another human being fully, but instead only as a stereotype? And what about all the bystanders? Was their inherent dignity in play in this situation? If you were there and you were trying to rise up to your highest and best self, what would you have done? It's difficult to intervene in tense situations and to have the presence of mind that is dignified and thoughtful. It's difficult to hold a crown over someone's head, especially if they're behaving badly. And it's even difficult to hold the crown over someone's head if they are hurting and wounded. It takes an extraordinary spiritual discipline and strength to be able to stand tall in your own dignity while others are insulting you. It's easy to get discouraged and question yourself, as Hans and his friends did in Nashville. They were cold and damp and ridiculed by the man. They were starting to feel like nobodies. But then came Dr. King, holding a crown above those students' heads, saying, "You are somebody. You are rising to your highest self." For some of us, rising to our highest and best selves looks like a pretty steep hill to climb. Some of us struggle more because we've been hurt. In some cases, we have been hurt so profoundly that it may look like and may feel like that those seeds may never, never sprout. But just remember that the capacity is there, the potential and the possibility for you to reach that level is always there, because the choice is always there. Viktor Frankl, writing about his experience in a Nazi concentration camp, concludes that everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. That one thing, your dignity, can never be taken away. Every day we have a choice of watering that seed of inherent dignity or depriving it. Every day we have a choice. Will I act with dignity and live up to my highest and best self? Will I promote the dignity of the people around me? The words inherent worth and dignity are displayed on our walls out in the lobby. They are inscribed in our books. It is time to bring those words down from lofty abstractions and put them into concrete spiritual practice. This is our first principle. May it live through all that we do. Amen.